Hey, thanks for tuning in. We are
Siobhan
and Kaylee. Roll the clip.
Today, we will be talking to you about technology in classrooms and how that relates to mental health issues. We'll touch on some social media, some lesson plans.
Yeah, so here we go. So we did a bunch of studies, like research to find studies, and we found a lot of cool information that we thought may be useful for teachers out there who are looking to integrate technology into their classroom in a safe manner for their kids.
And it's so important for technology to be used in the classroom in a mindful way where students are being educated on the risks, responsibilities, as well as the benefits of technology. In Canada, there has been a rise in mental health issues such as major depressive episodes, anxiety disorders, social phobia, and it's increased over the past 30 years, and it's quite concerning.
Yes, and as teachers, it's important to know that half of lifetime mental disorders present before age 14. So when you're an educator in, let's say, a grade 5 classroom, there's likely to be some kids in there who have had some mental health disorders pop up, but they don't know exactly what it is. Because at that young age, teachers aren't normally aware or capable necessarily to talk about it in a classroom in such an open manner. And I think it's important as teachers to know that we need to start discussing mental health and technology and social media and how to seek help and all of that at a very younger age in more depth than what is already being taught and spoken about.
And because this is such a huge issue right now, anything we can do to address the modifiable risk factors, we need to be doing as educators. And there's been a lot of studies that have shown that screen time is significantly associated with increased mental health problems, and that social media can fuel feelings of anxiety, depression, isolation, fear of missing out.
Exactly. And it's also important to remember that social media can never replace the real world human connections. To be a happy, healthy individual, it requires in-person contact with others to trigger those hormones that alleviate the stress and make you feel that way. They make you feel happier and healthier and more positive. And a study that we read actually said, it's kind of funny, ironically, for a technology that's designed to bring people closer together, spending too much time engaging with social media can actually make you feel more lonely and isolated, which escalates your mental health problems such as anxiety and depression. I found that one quite ironic because it is social media. You're trying to stay social. However, it makes you feel more alone and gives you that FOMO, the fear of missing out, a lot more often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so strange how what's supposed to connect us can actually make us feel more isolated and more alone.
Yeah, and I think it's hard having phones too, because when you're hanging out in person, how many times have you checked your phone when you're with someone in person? Mm-hmm. And it takes away from that connection still. Like, yeah, you might be hanging out with someone in person, but are you really hanging out and talking to them? Totally. Or are you just physically together, but both on your own device?
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And even if you're able to put away your phone when you're with other people, any time that you're spending on social media, on the phone, is taking away time that you have available to be in person with others, to be physically active.
Totally.
To have that stimulation free time that's required to have introspective moments, to consider who you are. If you're constantly grabbing your phone every time you're bored, you're not getting that chance to self-reflect if you're grabbing your phone every time you're upset, lonely, awkward, anxious, you're using your phone to self-soothe and distract yourself from unpleasant feelings when you probably should be finding healthier ways to deal with those feelings and to actually feel the feelings to be able to move on or figure out what is that negative feeling trying to tell you.
Yeah, I totally agree. I myself found myself doing a lot of negative self-reflection time when, you know, you sit there when you're depressed or you're upset and you're just scrolling through that feed over and over and over again. When then I recently took up journaling and listening to music and, you know, taking a bath, smelling the candles around you, smelling everything, mm-hmm. really getting into that environment around you helps you to feel grounded and focuses more on your mental health and keeping yourself in a well-being state of mind and physical well-being as well. There are social media apps you can use to do journaling and stuff like that, but it is important to make sure you do the real world self-reflection mm-hmm. techniques as well.
Absolutely.
And I think as educators, we can have some of that in our classroom. Like getting them started on journaling. Make sure they know what journaling is. How do they do a journal? You could have like a dear diary, like every Friday, you know, instead of silent reading, put in a dear diary, and they have this little book and they just get to write in it or whatever for 20 minutes. And that can be a good self-soothing technique that they learn as young kids.
Absolutely. And I think as educators too, we can be teaching them that technology is not bad, but that you need to have agency over using the technology and mm-hmm. not become reliant.
You can't always fall back on it.
And not be going on social media because social media wants you on social media.
Exactly.
But going on because, okay, in this moment, I would like to see what my friends are up to because I want to connect with them. I want to send someone a message to tell them I'm thinking of them, as opposed to, oh, I just got a notification, so I need to look at that. Oh, now I'm on it, so I'm going to scroll for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And teaching them that they need to be aware that social media incentivizes its users to be online, to be engaging, and that they need to use social media how it benefits them and not mm-hmm. how they can benefit these social media companies.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think also making technology safer for kids in a way, like physically safer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, all that blue light coming off of technology is really harmful to your brain and to your body, especially before bed.
Absolutely.
Like it can give so much sleep problems can occur, which can really, really affect those mental health problems that already exist. And they can decline your physical interactions with people because you're too tired.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think teaching kids and showing kids how to properly use a phone at what times of the day to be on technology and making sure they give themselves a break. Mm-hmm. I know like a lot of kids now, even when nannying, you like try to put them to bed and they want to be on their iPad before bed. When mm-hmm. when I was a kid, it was let's read a book for 30 minutes before you fall asleep. And now everyone's just watching Netflix or like a movie before bed and just going to bed. And it really, it doesn't give your brain a break. I know like people think it does because it's like, oh, it's just mindless. Like I'm not doing anything. Reading is like giving my brain, I'm doing stuff. And it's like, well, really, it's a calming activity that is still allowing your brain to function in a positive manner.
I think that's where as teachers, we can teach students to reflect on their social media use, on any use of technology or other forms of media, other activities, and to evaluate, okay, how does 20 minutes of being on social media make me feel compared to 20 minutes walking outside?
Exactly.
Having a conversation in person, and to really evaluate and reflect on how they're feeling, because it is such a mindless activity that if you can enter it mindfully, you can have a totally different reaction to it.
Yeah.
If you're using it as a self
technique. I love what you're saying about using it mindfully and making sure that you ask yourself, am I doing this out of boredom? Or do I actually want to be doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's out of boredom, there's a lot more other options you can do that'll give your brain and your body a way better outlet than what you're choosing. And hey, I'm not pointing fingers on anyone. I do all of these things. So
absolutely.
Don't go thinking we're perfect over here talking about it. We do it too. So it's just something everyone needs to be aware of and, you know, try and work on a little bit more for our health. And I know during COVID times right now, it's pretty hard because you feel, I know personally, I find myself just so overwhelmed. And like, I feel like I constantly have to be online in order to keep a connection and be mentally sane, because it's me and three other people in my house and I can't just talk to them all day every day, because that's, oh my God.
Yeah, it's not doable.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You need that away time and that alone time. But there's like hobbies. You can definitely pick up a hobby. Mm-hmm. And like for our music project, learning the ukulele, I've taken it up as a hobby, and it's been my mindful relaxation. I'm bored grab. Like, it's my go-to thing.
And not to age myself, but I have lived in a time where no kid had cell phones and we got by just fine. And you would spend time, you know, sitting outside your school waiting for your parent to pick you up for 15 minutes with no distraction, nothing in your hands, just your own thoughts and being with yourself. And you don't always have to be.
I had the same thing. Yeah, I had the same thing waiting outside after school. Everyone stayed. Everyone stayed after the bell. No one just left and went straight home. It was like everyone stays, hangs out at the park. We play, we have fun. I didn't have a phone until I was in grade 8. My sister's sitting here in grade 6 and she's had like 2 phones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? Like, and the only reason I had one in grade 8 was because I was taking the bus home and to school by myself. So I didn't have Snapchat. I didn't have Instagram. It was just to text my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't have my real like social media phone until I was maybe grade 10, which I know is like really late, but like I just never was in that scene.
Yeah, so. For me, because I'm older, like that was just not a thing. Like, even when people had cell phones, it wasn't, they weren't smartphones. It wasn't until I was a young adult that that was the case.
Yeah.
And it definitely changed my relationship with social media when I switched from having Facebook only available on a computer, and it was a shared device, and so I couldn't be on it constantly. And my relationship with social media was better then than it is now when I have constant access to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so what about cell phones in the classroom? That is a controversial subject.
That is a very controversial subject. So one of the articles we had read did a study that permitted students to use their cell phones for some class sessions, but not for others. So some students used phones, some did not in a subject. The results showed that students who used their electronics in class did worse on a midterm and final exams than the students who did not. But what is more surprising was that for the class who did not have electronics, so they weren't allowed to use electronics, they also did worse on their exams, even while not checking in on their devices, simply because there were more screens in the classroom, allowing for more distraction and less focus. Like, it just, when you're sitting in class and you have someone in front of you who pops out a screen, are you really going to be paying attention to that teacher? Or are you going to be like, oh, what's that dude watching? Like,
it's so hard. Even if you're trying to pay attention, your eye just naturally is drawn to that bright screen with that moving image. And even if you're very focused on the material being presented, that just 5 seconds to notice the stimuli in, you know, the corner of your eye, see that it's a phone, and turn back into the lecture or the
discussion. I mean, how many times have we in university been sitting there listening to the prof in the lecture and someone's online looking at online clothes?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, like, it's just that, like, the screen changes and you're like, whoa, that's cute. That's cute. And then you're like, oh, I missed everything he just said. Shoot. And it's something important on the exam. And then you go to the exam and you're like, oh, I was thinking about were those cute boots. Like, it's really hard to find a equal balance of having cell phones in the classroom and laptops. And I think in elementary school, it's probably easier. Because it's a smaller class, you're able to monitor what's on everybody's screens.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also not into that online shopping. You know, the worst they could do is maybe put on a little bit of a game.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, what kind of elementary school student would not do that? But I think really elementary school students will do anything that you tell them. So if you really lay down the law and say, look, this is used for only this, they'll listen.
Mm-hmm.
They will. They have the willpower. And if they don't, you know, give them that two chance or three chance and then you're out kind of thing, right? And be harsh on it. Don't, sometimes as teachers, we can be too kind. And I know, like, that's what teachers are. We're supposed to be kind. We're supposed to be helpful and be able to connect. But sometimes students think, like, if you're too kind, they just don't believe you would ever do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so really making sure that you keep that sense of I'm the instructor, I know what goes, and what I say is the way. Like, it's,
and if you do notice that a student is using technology in an inappropriate way, that's a good opportunity to have a teachable moment and go over some of the things we've been talking about, like, well, what made you go on your phone right now? Okay. Yeah. Like,
is there something I can help you with? Like, because
mm-hmm.
maybe sometimes all they need is a break.
Yeah.
Like, kids have a hard time sitting there for that long.
Absolutely.
So just say, okay, go get yourself a drink of water.
Mm-hmm.
Come back, take a breath.
And or then, let's have a body break for the whole class.
Exactly. Right, like, let's do some dance. Let's do some mindfulness. Let's do something.
Yeah,
get the sillies out, get them moving, get the blood flowing. Yeah, it's important as kids to have a full body learning experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about the negatives. Let's talk about some of the positives.
Well, I mean, regardless of how you feel about technology, it is here to stay. If COVID has shown us anything, it's that we are moving closer and closer to a technology-driven world every single day. Yeah. And if our students aren't taught how to use technology, that's going to be
a
huge disadvantage in the workforce, at university.
Yeah. And I think, look at how much during COVID, look at how much time you have saved and energy and money you have saved from not having to commute, from going into work and back home, going into school, back home, picking up your kids, coming back home, going to all these sports activities. When everything is online, you have more time, you have more energy, you have more money. Like, you're saving more and more and more. But it does detriment your mental health a little bit because, you know, as human beings, we crave connection, we crave physical touch, we crave, it's just who we are as human beings, we crave these things. But I think looking at the positives, it does save a lot of things in the long run, especially if you're doing it in a healthy way.
Yeah. And for students who have disabilities where getting to class has been an issue, suddenly online classes have become a huge advantage for that. And you can't ignore the benefits of technology in learning in terms of research.
Oh my God, yeah.
To open 10 articles in a browser compared to finding 10 books in a library. There's
oh
just
my
a
gosh.
Lesson to be able to search in an academic paper for a specific keyword and
Yeah.
only read what's relevant to that. Like, there are some huge advantages
Yeah.
to
Oh, there totally is.
mastering technology, having a positive relationship with it, but we also can't ignore the effect it has on mental health.
Some positives, though, with the mental health is it can help maintain and create relationships, especially during COVID, right? Like, when you can't see everybody all the time, you know, you have to have some, you have outdoor gatherings and you're limited to what, like 6 people? And that's hard. So during COVID, like when you can have this Zoom conference with friends or like a FaceTime or something, I find I'm FaceTiming my family that lives far away a lot more often than I was before.
Yeah, it's this common technology that we've all learned that it's now easier to suggest, oh, let's hang out on Zoom or FaceTime or Skype or whatever it is, because we're getting more and more used to it.
Really helps with the loneliness and the anxiety and the depression that comes with this COVID. Like, there's so many unknowns, but being able to contact and keep in contact with everyone can really benefit in a positive way.
And even prior to COVID, there's opportunities in social media to connect with people who have like interests or maybe belong to the same marginalized group as you. Or in my case, I have post-concussion syndrome. And when I was first in recovery, it was very helpful to hear what other people were going through. So I could see, okay, you've had this for a couple of years. This is where you're at in your recovery. Okay, you've got a more severe case than me, where you can kind of look ahead and behind and gain knowledge and tips. And I wouldn't be
able to support, right?
Absolutely. And I wouldn't be able to get this information from
an article
person, because there's not enough people who would be going through exactly what I'm going through compared to the specific individuals I can find that are going through what I'm going through. Plus, we have the same interests.
Yeah. I've always suffered with mental health, like with anxiety and depression and all of that. And I've always been really open about it with my friends and my family. And I found through this whole COVID experience that I've had a lot of people reaching out to me because they know I've been through this and they ask me for help. They're like, I don't know what to do. Like, I feel so anxious, or I'm so worried. Like, I have these thoughts and I don't know what to do. And having the knowledge that I have, I'm able to help them online. Like,
awesome.
FaceTime them and be like, hey, like, I totally understand what you're going through. Like, you're not alone. Trust me. I've been through this when I was like, you know, so and so years ago. But look where I am now. Like, I've got through it. And now, like, it's nice for me also to know that I went through these things for a reason. It wasn't just like because I suck. Like, it was like, oh, well, it can happen for a reason, because now I can help others and I can show that, like, you know, you can get through it. You can still be healthy.
You've built your resiliency.
Yeah. So we will now move on to talking about active versus passive use of screen time.
So we looked at a really interesting study. It's recent, like 2019. And it looks at the association between passive versus active forms of screen time on adolescent mental health. They define active screen time as something that is cognitively, socially, or physically engaging in screen-based activities that may be reciprocal in nature, such as video gaming, chatting, and working on a computer. Whereas they describe passive screen time as passively receiving screen-based information, such as watching TV, videos, or movies. Okay, so the study found that using a screen passively is less healthy for your mental health and well-being than actively.
A study that we talked about had found that using a screen passively is less healthy for your mental health and well-being than using it actively. It also showed that when using a screen for 4+ hours passively, you are 3 times more likely to experience a depressive episode, social phobia, and anxiety disorder compared to those who engage in less than 2 hours of passive screen time. And I really wanted to emphasize that the video gaming is active, guys. It's not always bad. So don't be like harshing on your sons and daughters for video gaming. It's a better way to use screen time than passively.
Yeah, that is so interesting.
Because when you think about like a video game, you're like, isn't that the same as a TV show or like a video or a movie?
And yet that in the study, active screen time was not associated with significant increase in any of those mental health conditions where passive use was.
Which I just find like video games to be, you know, I would think like video games, oh, that's passive screen time. Like you're just sitting there like twiddling your thumbs on a remote control when really you're like talking with other people and you're cognitively aware and you're thinking about your next move and like where my hands have to go, where my, you know, and it's so much more than just a screen at that point.
Absolutely. And it makes you think even about social media use. Like if you are just scrolling through your feed mindlessly, then that seems pretty passive to me. But if you're making a post or maybe you're filming a video or you're out on an adventure with your friend and you're documenting it, that would be active. So it really depends how you engage with the technology, how it's going to affect your mental health. And I feel like I'm just repeating myself again, as teachers, we need students to reflect on how is their usage making them feel?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because another thing that kept coming up in the research is how much screen time or social media use someone can handle is very personal. So there's no one fit all solution. So if we teach our students to figure out for themselves how much is appropriate, that's going to
be
very beneficial for them.
I totally agree with that. And I think like implementing activities as a teacher into your classroom that aren't dealing with social media, like a lot of our lessons today are technology related, right? Like it's all a YouTube video or it's a PowerPoint or it's a Google Doc or, you know, like it's so many technology based things. So I think as teachers, we really need to make sure that we implement healthy physical alternatives that aren't technology based. Find a time in your day to do a mindful thing, a mindful activity. You know, I know there's that 20 minutes of silent reading, the deer, drop everything and read. But like, we got to have another outlet. Kids hate sitting there reading for 20 minutes every single day. Like it's the same thing every single day. They need to switch it up. I know when I was a kid, I knew that deer was right after lunch. I would hate to come in after lunch because I knew I had to sit there and read for 20 minutes. And not do anything
else. I was the opposite. I loved it.
Really?
Yeah.
Like there were some days that I loved it, but at some point when you do it every single day, it was like, oh my God, switch it up, please. Like I'm bored. I've read this same book over and over and over and over and over again. And there's just, I think, I know it's important for them to read, but I think maybe switching it up in the time of day that it is. And I know it's after lunch for a reason because it calms everyone down, but you can have another quiet activity. Mm-hmm. You can sit there and you can listen to music. Like say they can grab something silent to do. And for 15 minutes, we're just going to listen to music and it's calming music and they can do whatever they want for 15 minutes that is quiet while they're listening to the music.
Yeah, I definitely think it's important to set aside time that is technology free, that is mindful. And I think when we are using technology, we need to make sure that we're still capturing students' attention and their curiosity. And with PowerPoints, you can still make it engaging. Or if you're using it in another way, it can just be easy for students to zone out and just copy the bullet points and become disengaged. So I think how we use technology is really, really important.
Yeah. I know we talked about it earlier, but I wanted to just touch on it a little bit in more depth, was that the National Alliance on Mental Health estimated that 1 in every 5 people live with some sort of mental illness, and that the average age of early signs of mental illness is 14.
Wow.
Now, most individuals don't seek help until adulthood because they don't know how, or they're scared, they're worried, they don't know what to expect.
There's so much stigma around mental
health. Exactly. And I think the more we talk about it as teachers in our classroom,
normalize it.
Exactly. The more normal it'll become, the less risk there will be with a mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. Because people don't know how to speak up. They don't know how to talk. They don't know, because they're worried of how people will perceive them. The other interesting fact is that 60% of high school students with mental illness don't graduate.
Wow.
And that's huge. Like, that's a big portion. Think about how many students have mental health, like have a mental health illness. 1 in 5. And then 60% of those people likely won't graduate.
That's significant. That is something that absolutely needs to be addressed.
And as educators, we're the ones that see them the most. Mm-hmm. We see them at their low. We see them at their high. Like, we should be there to help them and not put them down. I personally had a teacher in grade 11 who I was struggling a lot with mental health this year, especially. And I came into class one day just in absolute tears because I was so stressed out for this test that we were having. And he didn't teach us anything. He was a teacher that sat there in the corner, and he's a prodigy himself in math. And he would just give us the answers and say, go. So I wasn't ready for that test at all. And I came in like crying. I was like so stressed out. I was anxious. My heart was rapidly beating. I was sweating. And he looks at me and he says, oh no, do we need to go talk in the hall? Keep in mind, this is grade 11. He said this in front of the whole class, treating me like I'm a kindergartner.
Oh.
And he takes me out in the hall and he goes, okay, let's talk. And I'm sitting there crying, like just stressed out. And that made it worse. Like, the whole class is now looking at me like I'm a 5-year-old. And he tells me, he goes, so what's going on? And I was like, I'm just like really anxious and like stressed out, and there's just a lot going on. And he was like, oh, do you take medication? First off, what teacher has the right to ask for do I take medication? And I said no. And all he does is he tells me, well, you should take medication, it helps. I took it helped. And then he tells me his life story, goes back into class and leaves me in the hall. That is the worst experience I've ever had. And since then, I have never been more advent that, like, as a teacher, you really cannot treat your students like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just goes to show why that 60% of high school students with mental illness don't graduate. They're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
They won't talk to you. They're afraid. And when we're in elementary school, teachers in elementary school, we can help that. We can normalize it. We can make it more interesting, more aware. Like, students really need to know what's going on before it gets to that point where people drop out, or, you know, something worse.
Mm-hmm. You
know, the thoughts get to them. And
we haven't talked about self-harm and suicide, but that,
like, we don't see them again. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of being a teacher. We're the ones that see those first signs.
Mm-hmm. And we notice changes in behavior.
Exactly. And we have those connections. There are there are counselors in schools now that are free. They're open to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need parent permission to see them.
Yeah.
You know, like, if a student is really struggling, don't sit back. Reach out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so important as an educator to really understand.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that experience with
us. Yeah, no, it's...
And I'm sorry that
It sucked, but like, yeah, it's just really real when you think about it. And the book's authors, or not the book's authors, sorry, the study's authors go out to set out the fact that goal setting with students can help with self-management and self-monitoring. And they say here directly, it can be beneficial to start this as early as kindergarten. Wow. Implementing mindfulness activities into your days at school. Mm-hmm. Kindergarten, as early as kindergarten. Did you ever learn any of this kind of stuff in kindergarten?
I can't remember kindergarten.
I remember bits of it, and I remember enough that I did not learn any of that in kindergarten.
I know a high school or a elementary school counselor who does a lot of talks on feelings and big feelings.
And you know, like, you don't have to get into the nitty gritty, right? Like, just the feelings.
And deep breathing. And
deep breathing.
Realizing that when you do feel a way, it's probably connected to something, and figuring that out.
Yeah. So another thing to keep in mind as educators is lesson plans. You can revolve your lesson plans around these types of things. Right?
Yeah, we found some really good lesson plans by Common Sense, like the people who do Common Sense Media, Common Sense Education, and they provide a lesson plan for every grade level. And these lesson plans encourage students to reflect on their media diets, is what they call it, and develop personal digital media plans that promote productive and positive uses of technology.
These also provide an interactive learning tool called Digital Passport. Digital Passport is designed for grades 3 to 5 and teaches students digital safety, digital etiquette, and digital citizenship. The students learn through playing online, games, and watching videos. So using Digital Passport, kids can really learn about online bullying. They can learn how to safely use a website, how to safely use an app, you know, creating passwords and stuff, using it safely, making sure you'll remember it, and also making sure they're aware of what they're putting out there on social media, right? Like, using Digital Passport, it's even in the name. It's your digital identity.
Totally.
Like, kids really need to know that, you know? When they go to get a job, I know people say this all the time, like, be careful what you put on the internet, because when you go for a job, they'll see it. But it's true.
Absolutely.
School boards look up your name on the internet. Like, they'd be like, Kaylee Varant. And then if, like, something bad pops up, they're like, she ain't getting the job. So, like, you really need to be careful what you're posting. And I think Digital Passport is a great way to show that.
Mm-hmm. And it encourages students to consider their use and reflect on their use of technology and social media.
Yeah.
As well as things like how to search properly, learning about keywords, those, you know, technology literacies that will help them to succeed in school, at university, in all areas of life.
Yeah. And in the workforce too, right? When you're doing a project with partners and stuff in the workforce, you need to know how to look for an academic article, how to look for images that are not copywritten. Like, you got to make sure, as teachers, you need to teach your kids what copyright is, what things are safe to use, what things will not be used against you, and that kind of stuff as well. Like, even when you get into university, if something you use is copywritten, bye-bye, there goes that assignment. It's not going to be marked.
And these lessons provide exactly that.
Exactly. There's
one called Mix and Match Creative Credit, where students learn about copyright, credit, plagiarism, and apply their knowledge to their own creative work. And they also reflect on the ethical importance of giving credit to others for their work. There's just so much we can teach them about technology that I know I wasn't taught in school and had to learn myself.
Yeah. And no, me too.
Set them up for success.
Yeah. I also wanted to say that technology in the classroom, It increases interconnectedness in the online world, which has meant that schoolyard comments and bullying behaviors no longer stop when that home bell rings.
That's true.
So the bullying now takes place online after hours. So we don't see it happen anymore. You know, we used to see it in the halls and be able to stop it and say something. But now as educators, we're in a position to teach our students how to use digital technologies responsibly. And that allows us to support their mental health and well-being. And really the question is how. And like we just said above, digital passport, that's a good way. And again, like noticing symptoms, noticing signs, noticing behavior changes, these signs, they can be subtle. But when pieced together, they can paint a broader picture that will tell you as an educator that something is not quite right. And it can be difficult as educators to know where to look and what to do when these signs present themselves. But as an educator, you got to know you're not alone, right? There's a lot of teachers out there who are trying to do the same thing. There's a lot of places you can go. You can reach out to the office staff. You can reach out to the counselor. You know, keep a little journal with every kid's name in it and make sure you write down anything you see that changes in them. Because then you have documentation that things are changing and something's wrong. And then you can get them help because students don't know how to get help at some ages, especially in elementary school. And remember, you're not expected to diagnose a student or treat a student's mental health. You're expected to notice it and just act on it to get them help.
Totally. And I think overall in our research, we have noticed that there is definitely increases in mental health issues in children, adolescents, and that technology and social media can contribute to that. And our job as educators is to notice those changes so that we can be aware if someone is experiencing mental health issues and give them the tools to
succeed the tools
in this technology-driven world, and the awareness that, you know, images on social media are often made to look better than they really are.
Exactly. You know, like that, all the eating disorders that come up, all the body images that come up, they need to know, like, a lot of it is edited. A lot of it is photoshopped, you know, and as students, they don't get that. They're like, but she just looks, oh, but he just looks, but that's not me. Why is that not me? You know, exploring that world and showing them that, you know, this isn't reality. Reality is this. And, you know, they...
People don't go on social media to share their negatives typically. Some do, but for the most part, you're sharing the highlight reel. So that fear of missing out is not grounded in reality.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us and listening to our thoughts on technology and mental health.